You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch. On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch. Welcome, everyone. As always, a terrific show for you today. You might want to stay on the couch for the full 50 minutes we're together. Have a great, great topic. Well, one of my most popular, actually. You know, about a third of the patients who come into my office for therapy, who, by the way, are mostly women, they're trying to get over their husband's or their partner's affair. And they want to learn how to forget them. They want to learn how to find out how they can possibly trust them. Even if they forgive them, can I trust them in the future? Am I going to be hypervigilant all the time? You know, looking through the cell phone, checking the email, you know, finding out when he comes home or she. Happens majority of the time to women. Why do so many happily married men and women cheat despite knowing that their betrayal might leave devastation for their partners and possibly their children and their finances, their pocketbook? Why do so many celebrities and high-profile people who are mostly men fool around? And this is a big risk, of course, to their families and reputation. I could go on and on with a list, but you know who I'm talking about, folks. Well, after 25 years of research and clinical work, my special guest today is Dr. Scott Holtzman. He's going to give you the answers to these and more questions, hopefully help you out today. And if you don't get enough from today, we're going to tell you how you can get his book. It's terrific. Dr. Holtzman is the country's foremost expert on infidelity in marriage, and he is currently a staff psychiatrist at the David Lawrence Center in Naples, Florida. And we're talking about his latest book. A terrific read, by the way, folks. The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity. Dr. Holtzman, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Dr. Michelle. How are you?
Great. I'm great. And I really felt very positive speaking about great after reading your book. There's hope. There's hope for some of these relationships.
I'm going to induce you as the chairwoman of my fan club.
Okay, good.
Because your enthusiasm is making me enthusiastic.
Oh, good. I like to hear that. Well, there's so many variables that go on in so-called affairs, and I say so-called because you define in your book, actually, what are affairs, and what are some of the things that, you know, lead to these affairs? But I think the listeners will be shocked by some of your information and statistics about the reality of why people cheat. So let's jump into the first question here. What's the definition of infidelity?
Well, the definition of infidelity is not so clear.
Mm-hmm.
We all know when there is, you know, we all know that when we walk into our bedroom and there's our neighbor with our, you know, spouse,
yes,
in bed together in a sexually compromising position, that's infidelity. So there's the criteria by which all of us kind of understand that when two people that are married, and when one person leaves that marriage to have sex with someone else, mm-hmm, that's infidelity. But what I think a lot of people don't appreciate, and why it's such an important question, is because there are other kinds of infidelity that aren't necessarily recognized that way. So, for instance, I've dealt with many clients whose partner began to get very, very involved with communicating with someone via emails and text messages,
mm-hmm,
sending pictures over the internet, suggesting getting together sexually. They actually had evidence of them doing mutual masturbation.
Yes.
But when they said to their spouse, you're having an affair, and they said, no, I never even touched that person.
Right. Right.
How could that be an affair?
I did not have sex with that woman.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So there's an example
of somebody
imitation you can just watch somebody else do do a sexual act on a cigar, and yet the question is that infidelity?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are different kinds of sexual interactions that people argue about whether it's infidelity or not, and even those email interchanges and those text messages 2-3 o'clock in the morning where you're pouring out the contents of your heart, there may not be any sex involved at all.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I think it's a legitimate question as to whether that represents infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the answer to that question, Michelle, is the opinion of the partner in the relationship who is not doing it compared to the opinion of the partner who is doing it.
Right.
So there's a certain threshold, and if that one person crosses a threshold for their spouse, then they may be unfaithful.
Right. And in terms of texting or late night communication or whatever on the sly, you know, that hurts. That's emotional affairs.
Exactly.
Why are you needing to talk to another woman or another man this late at night? So let's get right to it. Why do men cheat? I want to know. Come on.
Men cheat and women cheat often for the same reasons, but there may be slight differences in terms of gender, but there's not one particular reason why people cheat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have needs. I think there's genetic predisposition to cheat. I think it may be within our own biology to not be with one person for life. But none of those are sufficient reason to say the one person cheats and another doesn't.
Right.
One of the ways I like to think of it is this idea of what I call the nod.
Mm-hmm.
Nod is an acronym for need, opportunity, and disinhibition.
Right.
Disinhibition, I mean the inability to suppress your impulses.
Right.
So the first step of trying to figure out why somebody cheats is to really take a look at what their needs are.
Well, sure.
Did you have some emotional needs that weren't taken care of?
Right.
And you ask the question about why do men cheat? And there is some evidence that men will cheat if they feel like their wives aren't paying attention to them, and particularly if their wives aren't paying enough sexual attention to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So there is some suggestion that that wives, if they begin to withdraw sexually and shut down their husbands, that their husbands will say that that's a reason they cheat. But my point is that that's not enough.
Right.
That's not. First of all, it's never enough to excuse infidelity. It's a choice somebody makes.
Yes. I actually recall a couple years ago who I saw, and the husband had cheated on his wife. They have 4 kids. After she actually hired a private detective, which is kind of sad, but she just was wondering why he was coming home so late, and she realized what was going on, but she wanted to confirm it. So
absolutely.
The reasoning for his, they weren't affairs with people who meant anything to him. It was just more sexual flings. But the reason why he said he did this was because his wife was so involved in the children and never spoke with her hardly at all. He'd come home late. He'd come home tired. It wasn't necessarily the nights that he'd fool around. But he would just come home and she would just say, can't talk, can't do it. Can't. She was always so focused on working, he said, with the children. And that's a lot of work. That's a full-time job. But he said, her communication with me, we have no intimacy or communication. I fall asleep, she falls asleep. So he had this excuse. But still, like you said, Dr. Holtzman, that's not really an excuse. You have to try to work on these things. You know?
People, right, and people do, they describe the reasons that they have the affair.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really reasons why they're unhappy with their marriage or they're not getting their needs met in their marriage,
mm-hmm.
and that's the need part. Now, the second part is the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and that's to say that even if you have a whole bunch of things that are just missing, either in your own internal world or what your spouse is giving you, most people are not in a position to say, that's it, I'm not getting enough X, Y, Z from my spouse. I'm going to place an ad on Craigslist. I'm going to go to a singles bar. Mm. Although some people do.
Right.
The interesting thing is, though, Michelle, that most of the people that I see in my patient in my office, mm-hmm. Probably most that you see in your office, and the people that I write about in my book, these aren't people that were basically deciding that they were going to go and find a mate. In most cases, they just found themselves in a situation where they met someone mm-hmm. who evolved mm-hmm. to become an affair mate.
Mm-hmm.
One of the points I make about this opportunity issue mm-hmm. in the book is I give a pretty lengthy description of Tiger Woods. And
right.
now
I
said I've never met the man and I've never treated him, so
right.
I'm only going based on what the popular media says. But all of these affairs that he had, he didn't put an ad in Craigslist. He met these people.
Well, of course.
Whether it was at a party
right.
or at the Perkins restaurant.
Yeah.
And even neighbors.
Right.
So I think that's the second, when you meet somebody. The workplace is the most common place to meet people, which is one of the reasons that infidelity among women mm-hmm. has gone up.
Yes.
Because there are more women in the workplace.
Right. And yes.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, thank you. So now we've got the opportunity in mind, but even if a person has an unmet need and goes, let's say, to the workplace or goes to Perkins restaurant and meets somebody that seems like an ideal replacement for the needs they're not getting met,
mm-hmm.
met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could be the need for power, could be the need to conquer. The third part is the disinhibition.
Mm-hmm.
So even though there's this really great-looking waitress at Perkins, and even though you're not getting enough sex at home, you still have to be able to, like, suppress the urge to give that woman your phone number.
Right, absolutely.
Or to say, what time do you get off of work? I mean,
yes.
Everybody has seen somebody that's
right.
gorgeous and has thought to themselves,
right.
you know, I wonder what they're doing after work. But
right.
you have to resist that impulse, and that ability to resist impulse is what we call inhibition.
Right.
You need to inhibit your impulse.
Yep.
And people that tend to have affairs are people with disinhibition.
Mm-hmm.
So the inability to suppress those impulses. And those three things together, a need, an opportunity, and disinhibition
right.
are what I call the trifecta that
mm-hmm.
ends up leading people down the road to infidelity.
Yeah. And we can sure talk about, you know, the inhibition. I mean, brought on by alcohol or drugs
yep.
or... sleeplessness. Okay.
You're right.
One of my favorite
and
subjects.
And not to mention underlying disorders
yes,
like attention deficit
I was just gonna
disorder
say,
or bipolar disorder.
That's right. Or
yep.
the, of course, ever famous narcissistic personality disorder. You know?
Well, you know, for people, well, I don't know that the narcissistic personality disorder have impulse control problems. We know that borderlines have impulse control problems.
Right.
I think more along the lines of antisocial personality, which I don't think is an impulse control.
Mm-hmm.
Often people with
right.
antisocial have impulse control problems.
Right, right.
Really is an issue of, in that case, does the person doesn't have any filters. They just basically think because another human body is out there that I want to have sex with,
yes.
I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They simply can't appreciate what that impact might be on somebody
right.
else.
Right. Right, right. It's, you know, it's difficult. It's really difficult. There are those disorders, of course, and of course there's dual diagnosis, people who are possibly alcoholics and then have disorders where there is less inhibition, you know, I mean more inhibition rather. They just can't they can't control themselves. Excuse
yes.
me. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a combination of things, but do you find that there is a worse scenario with someone who is emotionally involved in an affair rather than sexually involved? Do you think? What's worse?
Yeah, well, it will vary. Remember that because so many affairs begin in this kind of slippery slope way where you meet somebody at the workplace, you begin to have a conversation, you begin to bond, and you send text messages. Often people that are having sexual affairs are also having emotional affairs. Now, your you know, your businessman client that you discussed earlier might be the exception. He's basically saying, no emotional connection to these women, I'm just having sex. But most sexual affairs involve emotional infidelity. Studies suggest that women have a more difficult time when they know that their husbands are actually feeling emotionally connected to their affair mate, in that men on average end up a more difficult time if they know that their wives are having sex with some other person.
Yeah.
They're not that much concerned that that their wives are telling intimate stories.
Right.
Although that's an average, and I can tell you I've treated many men who have told me it just breaks their heart to think that their wives are lying in bed with another man talking about her life when, you know, and their lives together when she should be telling those things to him.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Let's talk about how affairs start. I mean, we briefly mentioned, you know, situations where somebody just sort of shows up. You know, you meet someone and they slowly evolve and that kind of, is that the most common scenario, or is the most common where, and I'm going to use men in this particular issue.
I won't call you out on that.
Many men just say, wow, I'm not getting enough sex at home, and I may be getting emotionally, you know, satisfied, but I'm just not getting what I need sexually. So, I mean, is this another common factor for men having affairs?
You know, I think that there are so many different factors involved for the evolution of an affair. And not getting emotional needs met, not getting sexual needs met, all of them really fall into that needs category. The real challenge for partners that are at risk for infidelity is to try to get their needs met within the marriage,
right?
Instead of thinking that you have to kind of look outside the marriage to find ways to feel, you know, to feel satisfied, happy, or fulfilled.
Right. And our job, I mean, you're a psychiatrist, so you are a medical doctor specialist as well. But I do know that you have seen and are specialty psychologist as well, working with couples and trying to help people. And our job, by the way, is not to try to be a matchmaker. Our job is to observe what's going on and, you know, give validity to both partners' points and yet point out healthy ways of behaving in a marriage or partnership, you know, as well. And we can't really tell anyone, no, you should probably leave this person. We can't do that.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned being a matchmaker, because I tell people, they'll say, well, I don't know whether we should be married. And I say, well, I can make the decision whether you be. You've already made that decision.
Yeah. Right.
You know, unless it's an arrangement, you've made the decision to get married. Now, my job is to help that come to reality.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to help you have the kind of marriage that you envisioned.
Right.
And so I think one of the big challenges for people that like me, you mentioned that I'm a medical doctor, but I'm also a marriage educator.
Yes.
And one of the big challenges is people that go to a therapist. And that particular therapist might have divorced themselves or might have had other personal experiences where their view is, well, you know, Michelle, you're not happy.
Right.
And I think the solution to your unhappiness is to leave your spouse as a source of unhappiness.
Yeah.
And that way, eliminating the source, like we're going to pull that thorn out of your side. Now you'll be happy.
Yes.
Which
yes.
I think is really bad therapy.
No, it really is.
By the way,
is.
Here's a phone number for a divorce lawyer.
Which
you get all the time.
Well,
you know, I think the question is, what do we mean happy? And what are the levels of happiness?
Mm-hmm.
Because studies tell us that when people choose to leave marriage because they're not happy, unless they were victims of domestic violence, unless they happen to get married, remarried in the period of that study.
Right.
That they actually report their happiness levels go down after the marriage ends.
Yes.
So I agree with you. I'm not telling people whether they're well suited or they're, I'm not their matchmaker, But they're their own matchmakers. They brought themselves together. So I'm going to try my darndest to teach them tools to stay together.
Yes.
Now, I admittedly, if domestic violence is involved, if you know substance abuse, or if someone's repeatedly having affairs,
right.
It's a much more difficult thing to
yes.
say, come on now, we've got to try to rebuild this marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes painful and sometimes it becomes dangerous.
Right.
But
right.
otherwise, let me help you understand how marriage works mm-hmm. and how to make it better.
That's a great, great answer. It's true. And also we have to define whether the individual, you know, has sexual addictions rather than emotional needs that have to be met or sexual needs, just general, you know, you need to communicate more with your partner what you need and what you want. Try to work that out. It's kind of a situation as well.
Well, that's right. And that's the advantage to seeing a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Not only can we sort out, can you sort out if somebody's got an antisocial personality disorder
yeah.
or, as you say, a sex addiction.
Right.
But you can also sort out whether the partner has something called pathological jealousy.
Yes.
Where they interpret everything as infidelity.
Right.
I mean, it's nice to know to here's the problem also. So many therapists, they don't want to take sides.
Right.
So one partner will say something like, well, I'm afraid that when you open the newspaper in the morning and see a picture of a star in the people section,
right.
that's infidelity.
Oh dear!
Now, you know, right? And it's like,
yes.
I mean, so absurd.
Right,
you know,
right.
you're looking at
no.
pictures of Angelina Jolie. You're about to have an affair.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so sometimes
no.
it's the role of the therapist to say. You know, so most therapists will go, oh, you know, let's talk about that. And, you know, if I were a therapist, I'd say, you know what, that's too far.
Let's look at reality here. That's
right. Yeah, that cannot be a definition of fear. We need to talk a little bit more realistically about what is and isn't okay. So that can be another role that therapists can play.
Absolutely. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, folks, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle here on LA Talk Radio. My special guest today, Dr. Scott Holtzman. He is the country's foremost expert on infidelity and marriage, and we're talking about his latest book entitled The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity. And also, we're going to share with you information about his other books that are on very similar subjects, but you can check out his website, and we'll be giving that information in a little bit, so you know, you can check him out, because you do want to get information from the country's foremost expert, you know, folks. If you'd like to call in now, you may do so, folks. 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. If you have any questions for Dr. Holtzman or myself, maybe we can help you. Also, if you're shy and you don't want to get your voice on the radio here, you can email me. My email is docmichelle@aol.com. Do that immediately. I do not do therapy over the internet. And you and I do not have a therapeutic relationship. I just want to make that clear, folks. So let's talk more about what to do if someone is having an affair. What are some of the steps that people should take if you suspect your partner is having an affair?
Well, you know, one of the first things you're probably going to do is say to your partner, are you having an affair? Now, the unfortunate thing is that along with cheating,
yes,
in infidelity comes lying.
Yes.
And it's a nasty combination of features, but mm-hmm. the most common answer you'll get is no.
Right.
And this, I think, is one of the sad parts of infidelity, is that not only has your partner cheated on you, but there become a series of lies. And even after you uncover it, in most cases, there are a series of lies. So if any of your listeners are people that just yesterday or this morning uncovered an affair, you can spare yourself a lot of grief by not lying, because eventually your partner is going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So a classic example is something along the lines of, I noticed that you were texting this person, and I think it may be inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, we only text twice. Mm-hmm. And then, well, you know what, I got the records here, and it looks like you texted 50 times. Oh, yes. We just texted a few times because it was that day because we were working on a project.
Right.
But wait a minute. I'm looking at the record for the last month, and it's 50 times a day. Oh, yes. And, you know, it becomes that way, and it's insulting.
Oh, it is.
To the person.
Absolutely.
And so you end up, that person becomes a detective.
Yeah.
And the other person becomes, you know, becomes like watching an episode of CSI, you know, where one person, you know, all these cover-ups and trying to layer by layer figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the things that I discovered is while the, you know, you asked what to do if you think an affair is happening, and I don't think it's out of I don't talk about this in the book at all, but I don't think it's out of the question to hire a private investigator if you don't know for sure.
Right.
You know, you don't want to be in a position of living with the belief that your partner did something wrong or they didn't do anything wrong at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the flip side is that terrible embarrassment of believing your partner.
Right.
And having them engage in a bold-faced lie.
Oh, yeah.
So the other thing, though, is with electronic communication, even though it is the... It these days it's the backbone of so much infidelity because it's just interwoven into people's affairs.
Right.
It also makes it very easy for you as a partner to uncover infidelity. So, you know, you get the phone records, get the text records, you can go to the email, look in the history, and pretty soon begin to figure out what's going on. You know, if your partner is going in a different room every time, if your partner suddenly has a new cell phone, I got this right. Those may be hints that something's going on.
Yes, yes. What are some of the other signs of infidelity, Dr. Holtzman?
Well, you can also look for changes in behavior. You mentioned that one wife whose husband suddenly wasn't coming home. So changes in your schedule, withdrawal sexually when your partner was usually pretty sexually active.
Yeah.
Or the alternative is when suddenly your partner's bringing in all kinds of new sex things.
Yeah.
Sometimes people, when they're having affairs, and I want to be very sympathetic to the person having an affair, by the way. It's not easy for the person having an affair. Many of them feel terrible about it and almost want to get themselves out of the affair. They don't know how to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not bad people.
Yeah.
So sometimes people in those situations will feel guilty and bad. They'll be buying more gifts for their spouse.
Right.
You know, you're getting extra attention, which may also be a sign that an affair is going on.
That's right. Exactly. Well, now that's wonderful of you to be, you know, so open-minded. Do you think a lot of men or women who are having an affair want to get caught? Do they want that?
You know, I love cognitive and behavioral therapy, and I'm just a terrible psychoanalyst. You know, I just can't get into people's unconscious mind. Think that they would by the crazy things that they do. I do think a lot of people feel very guilty, don't know how to end the affair, and may put themselves in that position. Certainly hear stories that are outrageous. I mean, people leaving receipts from hotel rooms around the house.
Right.
You've got to figure that they want to get caught.
Right. Now, talking about ending an affair, how we can do that, in The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity, your latest book, how can we start to end an affair? You actually suggest four particular steps of ending an affair. So what are those?
So let's go over those four steps so that your listeners can be perfectly clear.
And yes.
The reason I mention these steps is that a lot of folks, look, they really want, they genuinely want to try to understand what to do. But there's no... Well, up until the publication of my book, there's no rule book for what to do. And most people have never been through this before, so they're kind of sort it out themselves, which is just as, you know, as ridiculous as sorting out how to fix your car if you've never fixed a car before, or you know, how to fix the cable box if you've never done it before. You might be able to figure it out, but it's a heck of a lot easier if you just read the instructions. And that's where when you ask about those four steps, come in. So the first step is to end the affair.
Yes.
Which is common sense.
Yes.
But I will tell you, Michelle, that prior to publication of my book, there was another book recently published that said, well, you should, but you don't have to, and, you know, it depends on the, on the couple. And I'm sorry, I just don't see how it can work.
Yes, yes.
Unless you end the affair.
The behavior needs
the second
to stop.
Thing,
yes.
Yeah, right, because in the end of the affair, it doesn't mean putting on a hold, you know, or keeping a friendship going. It means stopping communication with that person.
Yes.
The second thing that needs to happen is you need to break off all communication with that person.
Yes.
So you erase them from your Facebook friends, and you don't accept text messages from them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, then you need to share that with your spouse, which is the third part, and that's called transparency.
Right.
So you break off the relationship, you break off communication, and then any emails, any phone messages, all of that has to be shared with your spouse. And it's got to go both ways. It basically, most couples have certain secrets to keep from each other, and I'm cool with that. I don't really want my wife to know how much I paid for that round of golf.
Right.
But
no, that's right.
But once an affair has happened, the rules change.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it's complete and utter honesty. Everybody's bank accounts. Everybody knows everybody else's passwords. Everybody can read everybody else's Facebook.
Right.
And that's really one of the essential features for redeveloping trust.
Yes.
Because otherwise, if you say, well, Michelle, you just have to trust that I'm not sleeping with that person anymore.
Right.
And I'm not going to allow you to spy on me.
Uh-huh.
because that just shows baloney.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
There's no reason that she or that you should have to trust me.
Right.
I have to earn that trust,
and
we need to transition to total openness.
Mm-hmm.
So the last of the four steps, and you've done what you've needed to do in terms of developing openness, the next part is to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the talking about it involves a complex, well, I should say simple, but emotionally complex phenomenon, which is that whatever the partner who has been cheated on wants to know about the affair, that partner can ask.
Right.
Instead of making up lies and filtering, et cetera, the other partner has to provide an honest and complete answer as he or she is capable of.
Right. It does help sometimes to have a psychologist or psychiatrist such as yourself who really specializes in infidelity to sort of guide a couple through this particular stage, because I mean the cheater is going to tell the other person a little gentler what they may not want to hear, but the therapist will say, okay, what are some of the reasons you need to share with your spouse that defocused you away from this stable marriage, you know, that kind of thing. So it's very difficult, and it's so hard to try. Is there a time frame in which spouses can learn to trust someone or feel better about it, or is it just up to the individual's, you know, feeling? And
that's a good question, and I don't know the answer. And I know I certainly know that based on my patients and my clients, and you know that it will vary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good question as to whether the, you know, the forgiveness literature itself has a particular predictable period of time that it should happen in. We know with bereavement literature that we talk about 6 months. Part of it, I think, has to do with how long the affair was going on for, how many affairs, how many lies were told. I would guess, and I think this is a reasonable prediction, that if somebody went to a convention and got drunk and slept with someone that they never met before, and came home and immediately told their spouse, that spouse's level of, you know, ability to forgive would probably be faster than somebody that carried on an affair over 5 years continually lied about it.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. It really does. You're on LA Talk Radio here on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Dr. Scott Holtzman. He is the country's foremost expert on infidelity and marriage. We're talking about his latest book. It's called The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity. It's a terrific book, even if you have not been cheated on or a cheater or considering to do so. This is a terrific book just to get information. And it does also help you learn how to communicate better with your spouse or your partner so you won't even have the issue ever in your life, which is terrific. So let's talk about the five steps to apologizing to your partner in a meaningful way that you suggest in your book. What are those?
Okay, so apology. I think one of the things that happens is once people have done those four steps that I mm-hmm. spoke about in terms of uncovering the affair
mm-hmm. yes.
and beginning to break off the affair and beginning to talk about it, I think that at that point, one partner really needs to begin the process of apologizing.
Right.
And but apology, people just they get frustrated because they'll say stuff like, "Well, I said I'm sorry. What else do you want?"
Oh gosh, that's the worst thing to say. Yeah.
I want a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so I think that I talk about five steps, and the five steps that I talk about mm-hmm. are the first is to take genuine responsibility.
Right.
For what you have done.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean, it's like, okay, I had an affair.
Yes.
Right. I got that. Yep. But you did a few things besides having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
And it really means take accountability for all of the things. So, for instance, I took time away from the family to be with the other person.
Yes.
I was lying about where I was and what I was doing. I embarrassed mm-hmm. you in front of the eyes of your friends or our family.
Mm-hmm.
I had sex with you after I had sex with someone else.
Oh, yes.
I did a lot of terrible things.
Yes.
I put you at risk for getting illness.
Mm-hmm.
I broke my promise to you. Not just I slept with someone else,
right.
but you really need to dig deep and see all the ways in which you hurt your partner
mm-hmm.
and offer a genuine explanation so that
right.
when you're saying, "I'm sorry," which is mm-hmm. one of the five steps,
yes.
that your partner really understands that you know what you're sorry for.
Yes, yes.
So now, and then part of that also is accept responsibility. Not only did I do that,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
it was my fault.
Right.
It wasn't because you were kind of having an affair with me by working so hard. No,
yes.
I don't think so.
Yes.
You were not paying enough attention to me.
Right.
It's taking full responsibility for what you do. Now, the second step
mm-hmm.
to acknowledge that partner is experiencing pain
yes.
as a consequence of what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
right.
not enough that I've done all these things, but on top of that, I have hurt you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think that really is a relief because some people feel like you just didn't get it.
Right.
So I think that would be the what would be necessary to move past. And then after that, it's really a matter of asking for forgiveness.
Right.
And you can, the simplest way is to say, "I'm sorry, will you forgive me?"
Mm-hmm.
Negotiate or bargain for, "I told you everything, now you have to forgive me."
Right.
Or you can ask.
Right.
But you can't force that person to grant you forgiveness.
Right.
You need to offer restitution, and this would be step number five, is
right.
to offer some kind of restitution. So
right.
you make a commitment to stay faithful in the future, you agree to transparency,
mm-hmm.
When you're interacting, you do all those things that we spoke about. And you can even do things like, you can give gifts, you can pay special attention to your partner,
yes.
you can go on a vacation together. I mean, you can just say, look, it's not going to undo what you've done.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
right.
it's a way of really kind of acknowledging that you've done something and you owe your partner, and that's okay.
Yes.
And the last part, the last step is to forgive yourself.
Yes.
And because sometimes people, they just get stuck on their own sense of shame and disappointment with themselves.
Yes.
And their partner's ready to forgive them.
Right.
But they just can't forgive themselves. And I think that's going to be an important part of moving past the affair.
Right. I agree. And that, that involves humility. That involves saying, "I screwed up. I hurt someone. I am capable of doing that, and I will make sure that I will not do that again. How can I? Well, do all those things that you suggested at the beginning. You know, it's funny you talked about forgiveness. I recall another couple, at least 10 years ago. He was cheating on his wife, and she found out. And they agreed to all those things that you suggest. They agreed to being transparent with each other about calls, coming home late, where are you going, you know, just keeping in touch, letting the wife know that she could feel safe and start to trust him again. Well, he did, you know, talking about forgiveness, he was saying, why won't she trust me? It's been a month, and I'm on house. You know what he said to me? This was great. He said, I'm on house arrest still. And I looked at him. I just looked at him, and I said, what is your definition of house arrest? And he said, well, I have to show her my computers, my cell phone. I can't go out with the boys after work and go drinking. I think my look completely, you are kidding me, aren't you, with this statement?
And for a whole month, heaven forbid.
Oh, my gosh.
But I think people get into that mindset. I mean, they really want it to be, you know, their ideal of an apology is that I say, honey, I'm sorry, and that my spouse says, no problem, it's forgiven, it's forgotten, and we move on.
Yeah.
But I would worry if that's if that's what happened.
Yes. And you talk about also recovery for people who, you know, have been cheated on. What are some of the steps to recovering after infidelity?
Well, the whole foundation of recovery is reestablishment of trust.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've reestablished trust, the next thing is to work on rebuilding your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you had kind of hinted earlier about needing to apologize for going off and having an affair when it was a perfectly good marriage. Mind you, there's no such thing as a perfectly good marriage.
Well, that's true.
You know, no. I mean, until, of course, you read all my other books, The Secrets of Happily Married Men, The Secrets of Happily Married Women, and then, you know, but unless you're doing marriage education,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless you're really educated and knowledgeable about how marriages work, unless you're, you know, frequently going weekend retreats. And there are people that have wonderful marriages.
Yes.
Some people do it naturally.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people teach themselves to do it. But most marriages have lots of disappointments.
Sure.
And lots of areas in which there's disagreements. And so you're going to have difficulties. And one of the things that we can, one of the things that we can do, and that I do, is to help people understand how to improve the quality of your marriage. First of all, to understand that not all marriages look like, you know, they were they're produced in Hollywood or in a Disney studio. And that you can work through improving the way that you communicate verbally.
Yes.
And you can work through the way that you are able to deal with conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be better at it.
Right.
And so that's really kind of what I want to help couples do.
Mm-hmm.
And get more fun out of their marriage. Enjoy their marriage more. You know, be on the defensive less.
Yes.
You know, communicate better.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things are possible. And get your sex life going again and feel bonded and connected.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that happen with some of the basic foundations. So, for instance, when we talk to couples about learning how to talk and communicate to each other verbally.
Right.
The main skill about being a good talker, being a good communicator, is to be a good listener.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing I just reinforce for people over and over, even if you have to hear horrible details of your partner cheating on you and you want to rip his or her throat out or scream or pull your hair out, If you can be a good listener and they can feel heard, then you're working toward helping to rebuild the marriage and strengthen the marriage.
Right.
But the minute you say to someone, I can't listen to you, I can't talk to you, get out of here. I mean, you can do that at a point. You can listen, you can be a good listener, and then say, that's enough, that's all I can take for today.
Right.
Can we continue this conversation tomorrow?
Yes.
That's perfectly legitimate.
Yes.
But each partner really has to try to find ways to get his own emotions under control challenge.
Yes. Are you there?
I'm here.
There you are. Okay, I just lost that last few couple of words that you said. Can you repeat
getting
that?
Getting your emotions under control.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that being, I think, one of the greatest challenges. And we can use skills and techniques, but you also have to look inside yourself and go, you know, what do I want? How can I bring back the love and the connection that drew me to this person in the first place?
Right. Wow, that's so interesting. I have an email here. Shall we tackle it together from someone?
I'm at your discretion. We can do whatever you like.
Let's do that. We'll just do a quickie here because it keeps popping up, and I think it's important. It's from Sarah, and she said, "Dear Dr. Scott, over the last 2 months, my husband has been coming home from work quite late. He doesn't seem to be drunk when he comes in. He started working out during the last two-month period, and he is paying closer attention to his appearance. He always makes a point of wearing cologne when he leaves for work in the morning, and he's buying younger, hipper shirts. Parentheses, he's in his mid-40s. Do I suspect him of having an affair?" That's a great question, Sarah. But who knows?
Well, particularly, I should say that I mentioned the workplace. I do think gyms are another place where people can end up having affairs, perfect setups for infidelity, because people are wearing tight-fit clothes.
Yeah.
Their adrenaline is kind of pumped up.
Mm-hmm.
They're emitting pheromones, and their own body is full of endorphins. I guess my answer is, sure, you can suspect him of having an affair. I mean, I don't know anything about him.
Right.
But if you're trying to have a discussion about it with him,
mm-hmm.
and he keeps throwing you roadblocks,
mm-hmm.
then you really have to wonder, why is he kind of avoiding?
Right.
I can imagine a scenario where you say, you know, you're wearing cologne and you're working out, and if he said something like, yeah, you know what? I'm really excited about this.
Yeah.
You know, I love this cologne, and it gives me a sense of energy, and I really like working out. I'm really happy. Are you happy with me?
Right.
What do you think? If he involves you in these changes.
Right, right.
And I think that's different.
Yes,
if suddenly he's like, no, that shirt's no different than what I usually wear.
Right.
And I always wear cologne.
Right.
You know, then you say, well, why are you, what's this about?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very reasonable to worry. And he may not actually be having an affair.
Yeah.
He may just be trying to impress other people. He may have shifted from need to now putting himself within an opportunity. And it sounds like he's already moving in the disinhibition part. So he's kind of like, he's ready.
Mm-hmm.
But he may not have met that person. I think the reasonable thing to do at that point is to say, it sounds great when you go to the gym in the afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
I ought to go to the gym too. Let's go together. I'll get a babysitter for those 2 hours and we'll go.
Uh-huh. That's a great idea.
And just enjoy your time at the gym together. Now, suddenly, he says, well, I don't like to go to the gym anymore. Look, honey, we really need to have a conversation.
Red flag. That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Sarah, so much for emailing us, and read the book. Let's, as a matter of fact, share with listeners how they can get a hold of your book. And also, you have some other terrific books that you've written that we briefly talked about, The Secrets of Happily Married Men, The Secrets of Happily Married Women, The Secrets of Happy Families, as well as your latest book, which is wonderful and probably the first of its kind I've ever seen about infidelity, The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity. Where can folks find out more about those books, Scott?
Well, it's the beginning of June.
Yes, it is.
I have been told that they have been shipped to the bookstores.
Oh, goody.
But they have been available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com.
Great.
For the last month.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brand new book, The Secrets of Happily Married Men and The Secrets of Happily Married Women, Secrets of Happy Families. You can both get in bookstores.
Right.
The Amazon.
Right.
At the Amazon, listen to me. and, you know, you can go to my drscott.com website.
Great.
For more information,
mm-hmm.
and because I'm so hip, I have my, you know, a Facebook page, as you do too. Mine is facebook.com/ScottHaltzman.
Great.
And really, yeah. You know, there's so much, you know, it's interesting you said to Sarah, well, read mm-hmm. the book. You know, everybody's story is slightly different.
Yeah.
And yet so much about what people experience go through the same things.
Yes.
And I've been getting some very positive feedback about the book. I wish I'd never had to write it. I mean,
right.
I wish affairs didn't happen.
Sure.
But it's nice that people have a plan and feel like they have the ability to move forward in some constructive way.
Exactly. Thank you so much for your time today, Scott. It's been lovely talking with you, and I know a lot of listeners are going to want to pick up your book, and of course they can replay the show after tomorrow. All the content will be there, and how to get your book and find out more about you. Have a wonderful day, have a wonderful weekend, and best to you and your family and your wife of 25 years.
I'll pass on your good wishes.
You write of what you speak.
And I will tell her exactly that we spoke, so that there's no question that I'm hiding anything from
you
her.
You are funny. Okay, Scott. Take good care now. Thanks again.
Okay, bye-bye, Michelle.
Bye-bye. All right, again, if you'd like to get a hold of the book, The Secrets of Surviving Infidelity, you can do so, of course. It'll be up here on the website, Dr. Michelle, Channel 1 on LA Talk Radio. Wow, it's about that time. I have to get going now and make way for more great shows. You can stay on the couch if you wish. As I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for other people, and that's the way it works here. I'll be back next week, and we're talking about another type of issue with relationships and sort of how to deal with some of those personality disorders we were talking about, if you might have them as partners. All right. Take good care. Have a good day now. Bye-bye.